The consideration this evening is, will there ever be worldwide peace? And Brother Michael is going to speak to us on that subject. As an introduction to his subject, he's asked if we can read the first 10 verses of James chapter 4. So, James chapter 4 and the first 10 verses. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war. Yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the fellowship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be afraid of the world, will be a friend of the world, is the enemy of God. Do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Will there ever be worldwide peace? We now ask Brother Michael to give us the answer to that question.
Now, last time I looked at that screen, it was black, and then suddenly it had writing on it. So, Rudy, I don't know whether you turned it on, but you did. Yeah. I was going to say, if it's done it by itself, if I wait long enough, maybe it'll do the whole thing for me. But Okay. Yes. Well, there's so much said about peace, isn't there? The phrase peace talks is so familiar to us all. You know, it just keeps popping up and we think, well, here we go again. But so often it ends in disappointment. Because there are countless thousands of people, millions of people, living on this earth who desire peace more than anything else. That's what they would love to wake up to in the morning and a new morning. They live in war zones. They live in areas where there's ethnic or religious hatred and conflict, there's violence, mistrust, fear, and they would love to have peace. It affects every aspect of their lives, the problems that are around them, their housing, their employment, their safety, their education, and until there is peace, they know that their lives won't change. But what do we mean by peace? Is it simply a lack of war, which we often think of it perhaps as being, a lack of fighting? Because in some parts of the world, and I guess the UK is one of these examples, it is possible to say, well, things actually, in many ways, have never been as good as it is for this generation that we're living in just at this point in time. So, for example, we hear people saying this is the longest period of time that there's been in the UK without war. And of course, that's possibly true. Although, of course, when you start to think about where soldiers have been from this country, you know, the country is involved in war. But we know what people mean. But does it mean then that actually people here feel, everybody feels very peaceful because we haven't had war? Well, no, they don't, do they? Because peace is affected not just by the presence of war, but peace is affected by violence, crime on the streets and things like that, by fraud, by family disputes. Things like illness and old age and depression and so many things can actually spoil the peace of a person and mean that they go to bed worried and they wake up without any particular hope. So it isn't just war that we're talking about that. So what is meant by peace? Just no war? No, it's not just that. It's much more. We're thinking about contentment, aren't we? Security, safety, predictability, trust, and loads of other words we could find. So is it going to happen? is there going to be a time where these things that everybody wants really on the earth are going to happen? Can we have any reasons to believe that the earth is, and people on the earth are moving, you know, however slowly, in that general direction, as it were? Well, we think about greetings cards. Where do we find the word peace? You know, they're being printed now, aren't they? Ready for next Christmas, you know, they're already probably in the stocks in the shops. Peace, 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 you know, peaceful year, peace to you, and all this kind of thing. And you know, it's a nice thought, isn't it? Makes you feel good to think about what peace might be. And of course, the dove, as you can see on the pictures there, is one of the images that's used to give the idea of peace, and we'll look at why in a moment. And then there's songs and everything else. I mean, some of you are singing now, aren't you? You've got, in your head, let there be. And I'm not going to sing to you because it's rained enough today. But how many songs are there that have been written and sung? How many poems have been written and recited that incorporate peace and the desire for peace? It just goes on and on. So can you imagine a world without the need for security guards, police forces, armies, everything that they use? I was going to bring my keys in my coat down there. I'll have to use Roy's. But anyway, I was going to wangle my key. You know, you don't need your keys, do you? Car keys, house keys, you know, just throw the lot away. You don't need that. That's all about security. It's all about lack of peace. People trying to get at your stuff. Not needed if we lived in a trustworthy, peaceful world. No baggage checks at airport. Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it? No passports. You know, fantastic. We'll just go on. But what I hope we can undertake together is a little task tonight to imagine that the earth has arrived perhaps at a state of peace, if you can possibly imagine that, and then consider how it might have got there. What would the possible routes be to get there? Well, it depends what you mean by worldwide peace to some extent, doesn't it? Last time I flew past Earth, wishful thinking, it was very beautiful to look at from space. People who have done it, what a blessing they've had, you know, to have the experience to fly around the Earth and to look down on it and to see the beauty that they describe. They talk about what a beautiful sight it is. And they can pick out the forest and the seas and the great land areas. And as you get closer and with better photography and so on, the mountains and the valleys and the colours are commented on. You know, the Earth is a beautiful place. But if you get your binoculars out, presumably, and you can look closer and closer, and they can look very closely now, can't they, at what's happening on the face of the Earth, it's not such a good picture, is it, when you focus in on the detail. And, of course, so much of what is dotted about all over the face of the Earth is associated with war, it's associated with violence. You see riots and poverty and any number of things that spoil peace on the Earth. If you could look more closely, and a good pair of binoculars wouldn't help you with this, but if you could actually look into people's heads and see what's going on in lots of people's heads, then of course you'll see these things that you're looking at there. These characteristics that seem to be in the human mind so easily. We're all familiar with these things, aren't we? You can look into other people's minds. And of course, we believe God can see straight into people's minds. Then, for some people, there is sadness, fear, despair. They live with these things. That's what their minds are filled with. Other people have other things mixed in with it. They have love there. They have kindness. They have pride. They have compassion, along with the more negative things. And I guess this is, we're starting to look at a normal human being now, aren't we? We have all of these things in our minds at the same time because of the many situations that are presented to us in life. So how is this peace on earth going to come about when within the human mind all these things are happening there? Well, there's one very simple way to bring about peace on earth. So how are we going to get there? We clearly live in a fractured earth. The earth is very troubled, isn't it? There isn't any peace on earth. It's a very fractured earth, right? How are we going to get to that world at peace? Well, there's one very simple way, isn't it? And that's just, you know, a huge explosion, a calamity, self-destruction brought about by man. Now, that wouldn't have been possible, you know, just even a couple of hundred years ago, would it? But now man has the capacity to do that. It would be possible in lots of different ways for the human race to wipe itself out by the use of weapons, biological, chemical weapons. Could be inadvertent, of course. It doesn't have to be a deliberate act. There's plenty of room for accident on the face of the earth. And sometimes the politically things get a little bit closer to that, then they retract from it, and then there's a scare about disease, and then there's a scare about this or scare about that. And so it is possible for peace to arrive on earth because there aren't any people left anymore. It's not a very nice thought, is it? Filmmakers love that kind of thing, of course. But how could we have a peaceful earth, because we're trying to imagine how could we arrive there with people living on it? Surely that's what everybody wants, isn't it? Does everybody want that? There are plenty of people who make their money, their living, out of armaments, out of being in the security forces. This country is known for its armament sales. You know, we probably all, to some extent, depend on it because, you know, it's part of the national wealth that we all benefit from in various different ways. Does everybody actually want peace? And actually, they don't. There's a lot that works against peace, positively against peace, because not everybody's interested in peace. Not personally, it's not going to help them or their country to be particularly peaceful. But I think we'll shelve that uncomfortable thought for now. So how could we have peace on earth brought about by mankind? Because that's what we want to be talking about, isn't it? What can people on earth do, let's put it this way for a bit, to finally bring about that safer and more peaceful world? What does mankind need to do? Well, I'm not going to spend long talking about that either, because there isn't really very much positive to talk about there, is there? Let's just ask a question. Are there developments that we're aware of happening in the earth now that give us any real reasons at all for believing that things are getting better? Can we think of anything that sort of suggests that the earth is gradually moving towards peace? It's really difficult to think of anything, isn't it, that's positive and consistently positive. Yeah, individual little projects here and there and little improvements for a while that perhaps make a village or a town a bit safer for a while, but in terms of across the earth, I don't think we can find anything. Medicine, of course, the fields and the advances in the field of medicine have helped to bring the quality of life for some people, for a lot of us, into a better position. But that on its own is not going to solve the world's problems, is it? So there are things we could name where there have been improvements. But is it long-lasting? Is it guaranteed? And would it spread? Could it spread to the whole earth? We won't go into the different parts of the earth and the problems that are happening. I think we all know about those anyway. Is the world backing away from war? Well, it doesn't sound like it in the news at the moment, does it? We've had, in the last week, you know, quite scary things happen. We get so used to these things happening, you know, that one country is threatening to wipe the other off the face of the earth, and we say, oh yeah, that's the news today, you know. And then tomorrow, you know, it's been retracted, it's been withdrawn from, that's not going to happen on this occasion, you know. It's just part of something that we seem to live with, isn't it? And then we think of the technology that is being developed all the time. Drones, they're just common language now, aren't they? We all know that drones are there, a way of destroying people a long way away without even coming to any harm yourself. Developing tanks that go into a battlefield and don't have anybody in them. They even make their own decisions about who to shoot at. And it's a horrible world, and it's going more and more in that direction as well. So, can we have confidence then that as a result of men and women's thinking and progress and working together, they will eventually reach this peace and stability that everybody would love? Well, I guess not, and that's why we can't talk about it anymore, can we? The facts, our observations of human behaviour, and I think we have to say as well, our experience of human behaviour, knowing what can happen in our own minds as well, and the trouble sometimes that can cause, we're very aware of it. It's everybody, isn't it? Now, there's a verse in the Bible where the situation seems to be put in a nutshell. It's in here in Jeremiah chapter 10. It's the word of God spoken by, written down by Jeremiah. I know, O Lord, that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his steps. In other words, man can't control, really, what he's doing. That's what it's saying, isn't it? And that's why there isn't peace in the earth. If there was a day arrived at, you know, go back to, you know, some of the Bob Geldof Band-Aid type things, you know, everybody in the world gets involved in something, everybody commits to something, you know, can you imagine that there would ever be a man-made event like that that would solve it once and for all? Well, keep dreaming, perhaps. Well, the Apostle Paul explained clearly the reason for why this could never be, where something like that could never happen. Let's have a look at his words here. And he's actually speaking about himself. He personalises it. But it is the reason why there can't be world peace coming from men. He says, I know that nothing good dwells in me. Now, we think of the Apostle Paul as a very good man, don't we? And very wise once he lived his life in the right way. That is in my flesh, he says. For I have the desire to do what's right. Like so many people in the world, they have a desire to do what's right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I don't want to do, I keep on doing it. We all know the situation. Oh, wretched man that I am, he says, who's going to deliver me from this body of death? And notice a mention there of the body of death. This dying body, he means. I'm living in a dying body, and whatever happens up here, eventually my body is going to die. We'll return to that later. So let's have a look at those words of James then that we had as our introductory reading. Because James asks this question. The subject comes up so often in the Bible. And he says, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Well, that's the question that the world is always trying to ask, isn't it? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you, your emotions perhaps? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You don't have, because you don't ask, and you ask and do not receive, because you're not asking properly, he says, because you want to spend it just on the things that you want. And of course, while man is focused on just what he wants, there's never going to be peace, because not everybody can have what they want at the same time. So it doesn't matter how many songs about peace are written, how many cards and pictures, whatever, it is not in the human capacity, and this is what the Bible teaches us, it's not in the human capacity to maintain peace. So where does that leave us then? Do we just go home and cry? Well, we can have an earth at peace without man. We've seen that. It could be a peaceful earth if man just obliterates himself completely. An earth without peace with man, which is what we've got now, isn't it? Now, are there any other alternatives? If you're an atheist, that means you don't believe in God. You just don't believe there's a God at all. Then those are your choices, aren't they, really? It's an earth with nobody on it, but back to being peaceful, no more squabbles. Or what we've got now, which is people continually upsetting peace and being at war with each other. And if you don't believe in God, there don't seem to me to be any other options than those two. So where do we go for an answer? Well, of course, if you're willing to accept the existence of an ever-living God, which is what the Bible teaches, God as a creator, God maintaining the life around us and our lives, then that changes things completely. And that's, of course, where we're going to talk about now. If you're willing to accept that God exists, a powerful God exists, and that the Bible that we've been reading from again tonight is his word to mankind, to us, then we've got access to a wonderful message about world peace. Let's go back to Genesis, to the Bible record of the creation of this lovely world in which we have been given a chance to live. Everything that God has made, we're told in Genesis, was pleasing to him. God put the first man and woman in a situation and he gave them a choice. He said, you can choose now how you behave. You can either obey my principles, God's principles, their creator's principles, and then you'll live in peace and safety and there won't be any problems for you. But if you disobey, you make that choice, then you'll have to live with the consequences, and one of those consequences was going to be discomfort and aging, and then death, actually. So it wouldn't be a life that just went on and on. Well, we know Adam and Eve broke God's requirements. They were no longer good. God had made them good, but they'd made a choice not to follow him. Their rebellion against him meant that they couldn't live in a perfect earth because they were imperfect. So God said, they will die. And that's when the Apostle Paul said, who will deliver me from this body of death? That's what he was referring to. Now, everybody born since God made Adam and Eve has sinned against God. We all do, don't we? All except one. We'll come to that in a moment. Now, a few Bible chapters later, after the things that I've just referred to from the early chapters where God made the world, then a few hundred years later, you come to the Bible record of how multitudes of people lived on the face of the earth. But the earth had become very violent. It had become corrupt. And at that point, we read of how God made a flood to destroy the people that were alive at that time. So here we are. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And he had a family. Now, the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. Today, like today, God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. So that was the situation at that time. A violent earth with just a few people who, in God's eyes, were righteous, were acceptable. And then it goes on in the record to say how God flooded the earth. He gave the earth a new start with just eight people. Just imagine that. Ever thought, what would it have been like stepping out of the ark, that you've been living in a terribly violent and dangerous world, all right, horrible world really. You step out, smell the fresh air, there's new plants growing up everywhere, all the bad people have gone that threatened you in any way or a bad influence. What a fantastic new start. And you can think, well, if that was me, you know, I'd have made a good job of it from then, wouldn't I? Well, unfortunately, human nature was still there in those eight people. And we read that as the earth got populated with more people, even Noah did things that were unwise and ungodly. And the world just went from deteriorated into similar situation to what it had been in before. That which prevents world peace really is what's in the human mind. It's a sort of built-in devious nature that's there, isn't it? It's driven by pride and greed, as we learnt in our reading from James. And when people are driven by pride and greed, then, as James says, people break God's laws, they spoil their relationship with God, and often spoil their relationship with each other as well. And so violence is present. So I want you to imagine for a minute that it was just you and one other person in the earth. So it could be Paul and Debbie. You can decide who's going to be the other person with you. All right, just two people. Okay. How many days would it be before you fell out with that person over something? I wouldn't get through a day, and Paul's thinking minutes, I can tell. In fact, he's arguing with Debbie about it now. But you know, two individuals just can't agree together, can they? That's the way we are. Let alone a committee or a tribe of nation, you know, a tribe or nations. It doesn't matter what the scale is. People just can't get on. Mankind never does find peace in that sense. Not lasting peace, anyway. And this is the crux of the subject. So if men can't find peace, even people that, you know, in theory should get on really well together, where are we going to go? Where is there to go for peace? Well, we're moving on in the Bible and we get to the book of Exodus. And we read how God chose one nation out of all the nations that were on the earth to be a special witness to him. It's another subject. We're not going to dwell on that tonight. It's a nation of Israel, of course. And God gave them laws. This is what we're focusing on. God gave them laws. He said, you are a special people. I'm giving you a special chance. Here are the laws, that, or some of the laws we're going to look at, that I'm giving you to live by. We tend to call them the Ten Commandments. There were others, and there was more detail, and this is a very, very brief form to get them all on the screen at once. But it's got the essence of it there. Don't need to read it all because you're familiar with it. Lots of them are don'ts, aren't they? Don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. But it all makes so much sense, doesn't it? Now, imagine again, if you can, a world where each of these laws of God was kept. Nobody broke them. It's just so hard to imagine, isn't it, really? We're familiar with what the world is like. It is almost beyond imagination. It would be an absolutely amazing place. You could trust everybody. You could trust what everybody said. Nobody was going to let you down in any way. So different from what we know. And yet that's written there in the Bible. It's been there thousands of years. Wouldn't the earth be a much better place if those laws were kept? Or even if they were just kept more often, you know, that would be a better place, wouldn't it? The first one is, you shall have no gods before me. God's people, on receiving that law, at the time when it was given, said, all that the Lord has said, all this, that God said, we will do and we'll be obedient. So, you know, their heart was in the right place, you could say. They said, we'll do it. We'll do it. We'll live like that. Okay. And of course, they only went on then to break every one of those laws because of human nature, as we've already seen. Now, the Lord of God is spoken about again, well, in lots of places, but in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And here we are, we're just looking at verse 1. This is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you. This is Moses speaking. That you may do them in the land which you're going over to possess it. That you may fear the Lord your God. And then, moving on to verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. So there's two very important things to notice here, and they're highlighted in blue there. The fear of God, holding God in awe. That means respect, reverence. That's one aspect of the relationship with God, viewing God in the right way. And then the other is loving God. And it's there written in Deuteronomy that that is what the people then and now and us should do. But of course, human nature again gets in the way. But why shouldn't anybody love God? If we accept what the Bible teaches, that God's given us life, he's given us this beautiful earth, which is springing into life all around us again here in this part of the world, isn't it? He's given us that to live in. He gives us everything that we need, food to eat. Why shouldn't anybody love God? So many don't even believe that there is a God. You may say, however, well, why, if God has provided us with all these things, which he has, that we do benefit from, why has he given us or allowed us to have then a flawed nature, which spoils it all? Why are we like that then? You know, so that we, in the end, don't enjoy the things that God's given us. Why is it that we have greed and pride and arrogance and lust and all those things that get in the way? So that we don't live peacefully. Well, we need to go back now and find out why God created things in the first place. There's one or two verses we could go to. Let's just look at this verse from Isaiah 45. Thus saith the Lord, who created the heavens, this is God we're talking about, he's God, who formed the earth, made it, he established it, he did not create it empty, he formed it to be inhabited. God made the earth because he wanted the earth to be inhabited. And this is the start of a longer passage, but let's just pick up the key points that we find here. Why did God do it? What was his purpose? Well, if we move on to Numbers now, we learn a little bit more about God's purpose in creating this life on earth. The people had done wrong. The Lord said, I've pardoned. In other words, I've forgiven them, according to your word, Moses. But truly, as I live and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. There's a little bit missed out there just to get the essence of it in. But the message is, God filled the earth with people, made it so that that could happen, because he wanted the earth to reflect his glory, to respect him and to love him. So when will this happen, that all the earth will be filled with God's glory? Because there doesn't seem to be much sign of it at the moment, does there, when we look around? Less and less people even believe in God at all. So we seem to be moving away from God's objective, not towards God's objective. And of course, left to mankind, it just wouldn't happen, would it? Jesus taught this very important thing. Jesus spoke about a time to come. It's still a time to come. Your kingdom come. Your will be done, he's talking about God, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So there again we have, that's God's plan. That's what Jesus taught people to pray for. But how's it going to happen? That God's will be done throughout all the earth. Well, it's a very big subject, isn't it? And it's really what the whole Bible is about. So we can only just touch on it from now until the end of this talk. How's it going to happen? Well, some of the most quoted words of the Bible, especially around Christmas time, because of the story of the birth of Jesus, speak about these things. This is a message to Mary before Jesus was born. Don't be afraid, Mary. You found favour with God. Behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son. You shall call his name Jesus. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High, or the Son of God. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. So there's going to be a kingdom, and Mary's son is going to be the king in that kingdom forever. Well, let's think about that for a bit. Has it happened yet? Has that situation arisen in the earth where there's been a kingdom that's gone on forever? No, that's why it's still future. The only way that a huge population of people, like the population of the earth, can find peace is if they agree on something and stick to it absolutely. That's what politicians think and hope that they're going to achieve, isn't it? They're going to be the one that finds the answer, that everybody agrees with them, and therefore everybody will be at peace. We know that it's never going to happen. It's the thinking behind democracy, it's the thinking behind communism, you know, that everybody will think the same way and it will all work. But it doesn't work. People don't agree. So that turns into, well, we'll go with what the majority want then, or what the leader wants. Perhaps it's done that way sometimes. And if the rest don't like it, well, they'll have to be punished in some way for disagreeing. It just doesn't work, does it? Man's approaches just don't work. But it's completely different in the Bible. I'm going to try to summarise now, in the last few moments, the message of the Bible, the message of God, very simply. And I know the time's moving on quickly. I'm going to summarise it. I hope it doesn't trivialise it, but I can't think of another way of doing it in the time. But here we go. God has said, I'm the great creator. Look around and you'll see evidence of that all around you. My plan, as we've seen, is to fill the earth with people who've chosen by their own free will to love me and to live by the principles that I've set. I've explained it in the Bible, so it's clear. And the Bible contains lots of examples that I've given you about people who've tried to do this. Now we're just going to snap out of that for a moment, all right? We looked at a few verses earlier that tell us that no matter how hard a person tries, their tendency is always to be doing the wrong thing. Back into God's message again. God says in the Bible, I know very well how difficult it is for you, and that left to yourselves, none of you will be able to be in the coming kingdom that I've planned. None of you can be there in that kingdom of peace because you've broken my principles and you've got to die because of that. But I've made a way of escape for you. If you choose it, let's snap out of it again. What then is this method of escape that God has provided? Well, that's where Jesus comes in, isn't it? The Bible teaches us that Jesus had a special birth. We've seen a reference to it. Born to Mary, God was his father. And because he was born to Mary, Jesus had all the temptations to do wrong. He knows all the temptations we have. He could have done wrong, like any other human being. But because he was the Son of God, and because he had perfect teaching and understanding of the ways of God from an early age, he knew that if he sinned, he would die just like everybody else. He also knew that if he lived a perfect life, but then allowed himself to be put to death as an offering for the sins of other people, then he could actually be, in God's purpose, the saviour of the world. He knew that that was what God wanted, his Father. Now, to achieve this, Jesus had to, what did he have to do? He had to have great respect for his Father, and he had to love his Father, which is what God really wants from all of us, isn't it, as we saw. And he had to be obedient. What a challenge that was. And he faced the challenge and he overcame it. Is it any wonder that the Bible describes the agony that Jesus endured as he faced that decision that he was going to do the right thing, however hard it was, and he went through with it? Well, 40 days after he was raised from the dead, some of Jesus' disciples were privileged to see his ascension from the earth. It's recorded in Acts 1:11. Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking up into heaven? They were looking up like this, weren't they? Because Jesus had somehow gone up from them. This Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven will come in the same way as you saw him go into heaven. So there's this wonderful message that Jesus is coming back. So what does this mean for us? What does it mean for the earth? Well, it means that rather than just living in the hope that people will eventually make peace on earth, and maybe it'll happen in our lives and we'll benefit from that peace. It's a vain and pointless hope, isn't it, that really? But we can see another way altogether. And that involves trusting and believing God's very clear message in the Bible. And those who've done it, whenever they lived, however long ago they lived, or whether they're alive now, as we are, or whether they haven't even been born yet, all have the same opportunity. Let me take you to a verse now from the prophet Micah. And this is like a vision of the future. And there's many of them in the Bible, aren't there? But now, we can't read it all. It's too much for tonight. But he's talking about the latter days. What's going to happen in the future? It's still the future now. And he's talking about Jesus coming back. And the writing in blue there. He shall judge between many peoples, and shall decide for strong nations far away. They'll beat their swords, fighting weapons, into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation won't lift up sword against nation anymore. Fighting is going to come to an end. They won't even learn about war anymore. That's real peace, isn't it? Peace in Jerusalem is peace in the whole earth. Even politicians and military people recognize that. That when there's peace in Jerusalem, that's when there can be peace across the whole earth. Why? Because God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, as we've talked about, that whosoever believes in him shouldn't perish, but have everlasting life. And that verse, let me just put it on, that verse shows us clearly that it will be those who believe and trust in God's plan for world peace, those who accept what the Bible teaches about God's Son, who will be there to enjoy that peace when Jesus returns. That'll be the time when God's plan is fulfilled and the earth will be inhabited and will be filled with God's glory as he wanted it to be. So will we be there in that day?